SCP-001, Touching Eternity. The ability to stop time temporarily is usually regarded as a really amazing and impressive ability in media, with a wide range of uses, from the lucrative to the salacious. What if time stopped indefinitely, however, except for a small percentage of the population? Sure, there's still potentially some upsides for those people, depending on their perspective, but how many people would truly want to live perpetually in a world frozen in time? This SCP-001 proposal takes a look at that exact sort of scenario, showing some differing opinions on why time should or shouldn't resume in such a case. While a return to normalcy sounds fairly welcome in that kind of situation, not everyone thinks so. Let's take a look. SCP-001 is listed with the Apollyon object class, and the containment procedures state that it cannot be contained, with those affected by it being currently considered lost. SCP-001 is categorized as a ZK-class temporal cessation event, which resulted in the total cessation of the standard passage of time on February 13th, 2025, at 5:10 a.m. PST. Following the event, the natural progress of time as understood by society ceased, with affected persons, animals, and inanimate objects remaining locked in the position they were in when the event took place. While it is believed to have affected an overwhelming amount of the population, a currently unknown number of humans have remained unaffected, retaining their ability to move and interact with the environment, but most natural biological processes have ceased. The mechanics of the event are poorly understood beyond this, and research remains ongoing. SCP-001-1 was a stone shrine located within Olympic National Park in Washington, USA, dedicated to Eternum, a deific figure believed to oversee the natural flow of time. This sanctum was the last remaining shrine to Eternum, as well as the last location of modern worship of the deity, and it collapsed on February 13, 2025, although the reason for doing so is unknown. Following the event, Foundation communication systems failed globally, severely limiting the ability of unaffected personnel to contact other Foundation sites. Two unaffected instances of SCP-6459 were recovered, anomalous homing pigeons with above-average intelligence, awareness, and dexterity, allowing rudimentary communication to be established between Foundation sites using pen and paper methods. These communications revealed that approximately 4 sites across the world retained any staff capable of operations, and only 1 contained equipment designed to address temporal anomalies. This site has since been dedicated entirely to the storage of the highest priority Foundation research and documentation. Through these newly established communication efforts, it was discovered that only 2 members of the O5 Council remained, and following a meeting between the two, the decision was made to enact the current containment procedures and begin research and work into reversing the event. We're next given some logs recorded by Foundation agent Jesse Kidd, which are stored in Temporal Exclusionary Site 37 for record keeping and posterity. The first one reads, "As I walk through this frozen forest, I stop to address the world around me. A myriad of snowflakes hang in the air, tousled by an unseen and unfelt wind. I run my hands over a leaf on a tree. It's stiff beneath my touch, unmoving. I tug at it slightly, but it refuses to separate from the branch. I frown. The scene is beautiful, a painting of a moment in time, but it's one that feels empty, incomplete. I lift my eye patch and press 2 fingers against the wound. It's an old wound. To those who still make some attempt at tracking hours and minutes, it would be at least 30 years old by now, but As I pull my fingers away, I can see blood left behind. It's still fresh, still open. I lower my eye patch and leave a simple sigil on a tree nearby. Touching it, I mutter a small incantation. The mark remains dead. It's a fool's hope, but one I hold on to, especially now with something beating in my chest. I pull the heart out from under my jacket, and it continues to beat in my hand in defiance of the world around it. This is what we've been working for, what we've been striving for. I press it against the sigil, and in a beat, the world around comes back to life. Instinctively, I pull my jacket more securely over myself as a chill in the air I haven't felt in God knows how long rushes over me. A breeze blows a snowflake onto my cheek, and I could almost cry. Instead, I find myself doubling over as every nerve in my body reactivates. My eye, my arm, injuries that I had largely forgotten suddenly scream out. A warm trickle of blood flows down my cheek. Fighting through the pain, I activate the dormant AIC frozen in the device on my wrist. An AIC is an artificial intelligence construct designed by the Foundation to aid in various tasks, and this one is named Cruz, developed specifically to interface with anomalous items and recreate their anomalous effects on a contained scale for research. Cruz recognizes Agent Kidd and asks how it got here, but Kidd just demands that it interface with the anomaly. Cruz tells him not to yell at it, but it does so, as Kidd shivers from the cold. After it interfaces with the heart, Kidd pulls the heart from the sigil, as the world goes quiet once more. The pain also fades, replaced with an uncomfortable numbness that Kidd has grown accustomed to. He looks down and sees a single drop of blood from his face hanging suspended in midair. Cruz is still active, though, asking what happened and why it can't connect to the network. Kidd ignores the questions, turning the heart over in his hand as it continues to beat, and he asks Cruz what it knows about Eternum. Cruz, working off of its offline records, just says that it's the Time God and it has some fancy shrine, but after processing the information, realizes that the shrine was destroyed, freezing the world, but they can use the heart to fix it. Kidd asks if it can chart a route to where the shrine is, avoiding Seattle if possible, to which Cruz says that it can, if he asks nicely. Kidd promptly does, and Cruz begins plotting the route, as Kidd writes up a report and attaches it to a homing pigeon. Cruz eventually says that the route should take about 3 days total, before realizing its mistake and apologizing. Kidd thanks it and tells it not to worry, as they have all the time in the world. He looks down at the beating heart in his hand and sticks it back in his coat. He can't say that he feels it under there, but there's a certain warmth to it that sits against his chest. He taps the sigil one last time and begins walking. The journey is quiet, with Cruz making no sound beyond the occasional word of caution, stopping him from going tumbling into a valley. Eventually, he feels something, almost like eyes on his back, and asks Cruz to do a quick scan of the area. Before Cruz can warn him, though, they're surrounded by a group of men, each with a blade at their side. At the lead stands a tall, suited man, who looks at Kidd with a smile and greets him by name, asking if he's been well. Kidd chuckles and holds his arm up in surrender, greeting Agent Saul in return and saying that he's been better. The two seem to be old friends, but then Saul raises an eyebrow at Kid's eye patch, drawing his sword and approaching. He tilts Kid's head up slightly and remarks that that wound is fresh, asking how in the world that happened. Kidd replies that he was probably just careless the last time he drew a sigil, but Saul says that he's not a fool, and asks if they found it. Kidd says that they find a lot of things, but Saul slaps him hard enough to send him stumbling, telling him to quit toying with him. They have played this stupid game enough times now. Cruz interjects to ask Kid who this idiot is, as he seems kind of familiar. Kid explains that this is Agent Saul, formerly of the Foundation, but now a member of the Keepers, a hostile group that formed shortly after the event, composed of people dedicated to interfering with Foundation attempts to restore the flow of time. Saul grabs him by the arm, just above the prosthetic, and says that he didn't take the whole arm last time, but he can very well take the rest, and the other arm too. Kid asks Cruz for advice, who tells him to perform a quick kick to the back of his knees, as he has a weak stance, and honestly should be embarrassed. Kid sweeps at Saul's legs, causing him to fall to the ground with a shout, and Kid starts running. Saul wastes no time barking orders at his grunts, starting the chase. Cruz guides Kid as he runs, allowing him to avoid a sword swing, and it tells him to draw his gun. Kid replies that those don't work, as thermodynamics isn't currently functioning, which Cruz realizes is why they were using swords. Kid keeps running, managing to shake them off, until he finds himself on the edge of a ravine with Saul behind him. He tells Kid to hand over whatever it is, as he has no problem tearing him apart for it, and he can't imagine a worse hell than spending eternity as a torso in the woods. Saul then rushes him, but with the aid of Cruz, Kid is able to avoid the blows until the two swap sides, and Kid tackles him, sending him stumbling into the ravine. Kid tries to then save him from falling, but Saul grabs Kid's prosthetic, which slips off, and the two both end up spiraling down into the ravine. Kid notes that there are a few blessings that come with living in a frozen world, with one of them being the ability to sustain injuries with no associated pain. Their fall into the ravine in a normal world would likely have left both of them unconscious, but instead they were both able to hop back onto their feet as if nothing had happened. Saul remarks that he made it all this time without so much as a scratch on him, and it's clear that his shoulder is dislocated. He asks what the hell that was about, trying to catch him after pushing him off. Kid tries to argue that he didn't want to let him fall, but Saul grabs him by the collar, motioning to punch him, when Cruz interrupts to say that pushing him was its idea. Kid shows his wrist device containing Cruz to Saul, who is bewildered that Kid has any tech that actually works. Kid just says that it's classified, prompting Saul to say that he really should just kill him here. Kid replies that he's a bit surprised he hasn't, as he was kind of hoping to just be a torso in the woods. Saul tells him not to say stuff like that with a straight face, as people will think he's serious. Kid says that there are worse places to spend eternity, since at least there's a view here, but Saul just looks at him with concern, and remarks that there's something deeply wrong with him. Kid just shrugs and asks if he's free to go, telling Cruz to get them back on that route, picking up his prosthesis and reattaching it. Saul asks him what route he's talking about, and Kid simply tells him that he's off to the Shrine of Eternum, showing him the beating heart. Saul's eyes go wide, and he asks if they're really serious about this whole thing. Kid lifts his eye patch and presses his fingers against the wound, drawing the sigil, as he says that they always have been. He's going to take this heart to the shrine and restore it, so that everything will be just as it was. Saul rolls up his sleeves and says that unfortunately, he can't just let that happen, and he draws his sword. Kid replies that maybe he and the rest of the Keepers have just forgotten what it's like, and he presses the heart against the sigil, restoring time to the world around them. Saul drops his sword and grabs his shoulder, shouting in pain as the wind whips through his hair. Kid tries to hide it, but as soon as his nerves light up again, he doubles over and vomits out the remnants of a breakfast, eaten both 30 years and just an hour ago. He finally shouts in pain and removes the heart from the sigil, the world freezing in place again. Saul stands, shocked, still grabbing his shoulder, and says that Kid will die if he succeeds. Kid sees the fear in his eyes and doesn't respond, instead just asking Cruz how the route is coming. Cruz says that it's all set, and it's a bit longer now, but as he said, time is of no consequence. Saul tells him not to ignore him, and Kid pauses for a moment before stating that the world can't stay trapped in an empty eternity, even if that's keeping all of them alive right now. He then asks Saul if he'd like his help reuniting him with his fellow keepers, further confusing Saul, since as soon as Kid approaches their headquarters, they're going to take that heart. Kid just smirks and extends a hand, and he can see something akin to hesitation in his eyes. Saul eventually mutters something and calls him a damn fool, but he accepts. Cruz steps in to object, but Kid tells it to chart a route through Seattle and then to the shrine. Cruz accepts that he has no choice, and it'll make a new route for him and the traitor. After traveling for some time, Saul criticizes Cruz on its navigation skills, swearing that they're just going in circles. Kid tells him to go easy on it, as Cruz was designed to interface with anomalous objects, not to navigate. It was the only AIC that they could actually activate, and it's better than nothing. Cruz tells Saul to stop complaining, as it's pretty difficult to navigate without GPS. They continue walking in silence, with Kid turning his head every few minutes to check for Agent Saul, wanting to make sure they don't get separated. Cruz then says that this landslide should do the trick, as they see a cascade of dirt and stone suspended in midair along the side of the ravine. Cruz notes that it would only ever recommend this route to someone it disliked, but this is their safest way out of the ravine. Saul and Kid begin climbing up the landslide, but Kid has to avoid using his prosthetic to help, as it's a rather crude construction. This soon results in him starting to fall, but Saul grabs him and pulls him up. Kid thanks him, but Saul just says that he's got the map, and they can't risk losing that. Cruz objects to being called a map, but tells them to head north, or to their left, for those here too stupid to know which way that is. Saul gives a quick glare to the device on Kid's wrist before they start marching again. As they walk, Kid finds himself running his fingers over the leaves and plants, which remain stiff and unmoving beneath his touch. He presses his finger against the thorn of a holly bush as they pass by, and he can see the small prick left on the tip, but there's no sensation or pain. It's the same with the snow gathered atop the leaves, with there being no chill to their touch. He casts his eyes to the sky, seeing two songbirds frozen in place in the air. They're twisted around one another, perhaps caught in a mating display, and they hang in place like a photograph. Saul asks if he's all right, as he's been wandering every which way and it's starting to weird him out. Kid just shrugs and keeps walking, but Saul grabs his shoulder, telling him to answer him, as he's real tired of him acting all aloof out of nowhere. Kid shakes his hand off and asks how can none of this bother him. He can't move past what they've lost, and when he activated the heart for the first time, he thought of all the people trapped, and how much they deserve to actually feel these things again. Saul looks him over before calling him a hypocrite, but Kid feels something like an alert going off in his head, and he holds a finger to his mouth. Saul begins to complain, but he's cut off as something jabs into Kid's back, knocking him off his feet. Cruz announces that it's detecting several hostiles around them, at least five total. Kid rolls to his back, narrowly avoiding a spear jabbed into the ground, and kicks the individual in the chest. Kid then hops to his feet and draws his bat, prompting Saul to exclaim about him not having a sword. They're surrounded, with each of the men bearing a series of severe wounds on their bodies that would normally have killed them, They waste no time rushing the two, and a melee ensues. Cruz asks who these guys are, and while both Kid and Saul are familiar with them, they don't have a name. Saul explains that they're not associated with the Keepers. They're just a bunch of freaks who really love the collapse of societal order and doing whatever they please. Kid tells Cruz to come up with an escape route, with minimal injuries possible, as he dodges and weaves through the brawl. Saul, on the other hand, is more akin to a hurricane, striking with wild, sweeping attacks, but their opponents pay their injuries no mind. Cruz gives Kid some instructions, and Kid smashes a man's shoulder with his bat, inadvertently severing the arm from his body. Kid almost hesitates to apologize for the damage done, but he slams his shoulder into him, toppling him to the ground. He then is about to run from the group, but he freezes, just staring at the man's arm as Saul swears at him. The man gets back on his feet and tackles Kid, pressing a knife to his throat. Kid whispers for him to just do it, but Saul tackles the man off of him, dragging Kid to his feet. He practically drags him as they run, until eventually they lose their tail. Saul then punches him, calling him a fool and asking what exactly he's trying to pull. Kid replies that he just doesn't want to hurt people if he doesn't have to. But Saul asks if he has a messiah complex or something, convinced that he's the magical lamb sent to save the world. Those men wanted him as close to dead as someone can be now, for no reason beyond the fact that they could. Kid says that it's not up to him to condemn them, as he knows what it's like to be hurt. When everything is back, the people still with them are going to feel every single thing they've missed since it all stopped. Every single nerve in their body is going to scream out as it comes back to life. He doesn't have the right to give that pain to people, and if it means that he has to hurt for them, then he'll do it. Saul asks Cruz where the closest town is, which Cruz reluctantly tells him, so Saul grabs Kid's hand and tells him to follow him. Following Cruz's instructions, they travel into a small suburb near the edge of the forest. The signs of a day in the process of beginning are visible, with children waiting at a bus stop, a man with coffee in his hand fumbling with car keys, and a woman walking a dog, all frozen in that moment. Saul tells Kid that he wants him to see exactly what he's doing when he chooses the coward's way out of a fight, and leads him over to the man fumbling with his keys. He tells him to take a good long look at the damage done here, and Kid examines the man, noticing a series of fresh wounds across his body. None of them are life-threatening, but they are fresh, and Saul gestures to the other people around. Every person outside bears fresh injuries on their body, with some being small, as if dealt by a hand that was merely curious as to what would happen, while others are deeper, dealt by a hand desperate for satisfaction. Finally, Kid asks why, and Saul says that he knows why. There's real evil in the world, and there are people who just pretend they aren't evil until the conditions that keep them moral vanish. That's all those rogue groups are, and he spent enough time with the Foundation watching as they ignored things like this in favor of restoring their idea of normalcy. This is what he means when he says that Kid needs to get real, and if someone is trying to kill him, he needs to fight back. He shoves Kid, and says that the fact that he's ignorant of all this here says enough. He shoves Kid again, causing him to stumble back, and tells him that he can go on making promises he can't keep to people he doesn't know, or he can wisen up and make the most of the situation he's stuck in. Kid struggles to respond as he looks around, realizing that if he succeeds, then all of the people here will feel the sudden pain that they never deserved to feel. Kid asks Saul if he can really condemn people for lashing out under the worst circumstances they could possibly be in. And he replies that if you ask any man fighting in any war what they're fighting for, Not a single one can give a real answer. The Keepers have made something new from all of that, a proper society, and they actually make an effort to deal with the people who do things like this while the Foundation sits on its hands, fixating on the past. To Kid, this world is hell, but to him, this is freedom. They finally get a world with no pain, no hunger, and while the rogues out there are proof that the worst in society cannot and will not change, at least now it doesn't hurt when they harm them. He doesn't understand how Kid can live through all of this and still think that mercy is an option. Kid just asks Cruz how close the nearest shoreline is, who reluctantly maps a route west, and he tells Saul that now it's his turn to show him something. They follow Cruz's directions to the shoreline and onto the beach, where they find a handful of frozen people, some dipping their feet into the frigid waters, a handful of kids chasing a flock of seagulls, and others simply watching from further up the beach. Kid asks Saul what he hears, to which he just frowns and says that that's a stupid question. Kid tells him that he should be hearing laughter, the cries of birds, the crashing of waves, but instead, it's all dead silent. This is what he's fighting for, a chance to have a future. He's fighting for this, moments like this, moments of joy, struggle, and sorrow, the things that make us human. He wants everyone to have the ability to experience these things in their truest form again, even Saul. It isn't about himself, and it never has been, as he has a duty to leave a better world for the people who come after him, one where they have the ability to actually have something worth living for. The two walk towards the water, and eventually step onto the water itself, it being solid beneath their feet. Saul is hesitant, but follows, and they both stand on the water, looking back at the beach. Kid says that he's willing to give up everything he has if it means everyone else can go on living and experiencing what it means to be alive. What they have now isn't that, and what is life if people don't actually get to feel or experience anything? There isn't anything in this world worth living for the way things are now. Saul stares at him briefly and asks if he's trying to convince him or convince himself. Kid just shakes his head, as he doesn't have an answer that matters, and says that anything is better than what they have now. They begin walking back to the beach, and Kid tells Cruz to get them back on track. As they continue walking, Saul slows down and tries to pluck a leaf from a tree, but it doesn't budge. For a brief moment, a sincere frown settles on his face, and he tells Kid to just remember that he can't complete his mission if he's dead. As they near the city, the air hangs tense between the two, and Saul slows down his pace more and more until Cruz barks out for him to pick up the pace, since he's the reason they're going this far out of their way. As they crest a hill, the city of Seattle comes into view, once under Foundation control, but now owned by the Keepers. They begin their descent into the city itself, surrounded by frozen people stuck in their routine. Saul then finally turns to Kid with a severe expression, asking him if he worked in amnestics before all this. There were always rumors of the Foundation using them to basically set everything back to zero, a mass memory wipe of the world to act like something never happened. He never put much stock into stuff like that, but now he has to know if it's true. Cruz quickly denies anything, saying that it's classified info, but Kid admits that it is true. Saul says that he should have guessed, and remarks that they were always working for a pretty shady group. It seems like he's been the bad guy for longer than he thought. Kid laughs, the first genuine laugh in a long time, and says that running away isn't always so bad. When you run, you're always a step ahead, but even if they didn't have that ability, things would be okay in the end. Humanity can always rebuild, and they've done it before, time and time again. Kid smiles and says that things will get better, but Saul stops walking, telling him to just turn around and run. He said it before, back when they first fell into the ravine, that Kid is a wanted fugitive in their eyes, and the second he sets foot near the base, they're taking that heart and ensuring the Foundation has no hopes of getting it back. If he wants any hope of his little mission succeeding, then now's his time to run. Kid asks if this is a trick, but Saul says that he can't say he believes in his mission, but he doesn't really know what he believes in right now. What he does know is that Kid seems to really believe in it, so he should go and prove him wrong. Kid nods and turns to run, but before he can, his escape is blocked off by a set of Keeper agents. Saul tells them to stand down, but one of them, an apparent leader, shakes her head. She tells them to surrender their arms, despite Saul outranking her, and she explains that the decision was made to strip him of his rank and title the second he betrayed their organization. By refusing to secure the relic when provided ample opportunity and giving a chance for a known fugitive to escape, he has violated the code of the Keepers. Kid, however, states that he surrenders on the explicit condition that Saul is pardoned, placing his arms behind his head and dropping to his knees. The agent agrees, telling the others to cuff Kid, kicking him to the ground and handcuffing him. The agent then knocks Saul to the ground and kicks him in the ribs, stating that treason is treason. She tells him that the penalty for treason is normally death, but since that's not much of an option, she can at least offer the next big thing. She takes a sword and strikes it down at Saul's left arm, cleaving it from his shoulder. Saul's mouth hangs agape as Kid screams, and his body acts before his mind can think, struggling against the handcuffs. The agent brings the sword down again against Saul's chest, sending him rolling against the pavement, and Kid grabs his prosthetic arm, ripping it free. The men attempt to restrain him, but he begins beating them with the arm, the rage he feels being the first thing he's felt in a long time. He weaves between their blows and strikes behind their knees, sending them to the ground, before racing to Saul's side and helping him back to his feet. Kid then draws Saul's sword and starts swinging it without aim or care, cutting down the agent that started this. The two flee as Kid offers a prayer, deep down hoping that God doesn't hear him. They keep running and running, long after Kid is certain that they aren't being followed, as far as his legs will take him, and then even further. Instinct must have set in, because once his eyes and head are clear, he finds himself back to the closest thing to a haven he could think of, a small settlement hidden away from prying eyes. Even the Foundation hasn't found this place, and Cruz asks where exactly they are. Kid ignores him, instead heading into a tent to take Saul to the one person who can help, an older woman named Anne. She looks up in surprise, but looks at Kid with a smile, stating that even though it's always good to see him, she thought that he was all set to go. Kid tells her that this is someone who needs help, as he sits Saul down in a chair. Saul asks why he shut down if it didn't hurt, and Kid explains that he's not psychologically accustomed to it all yet. He expected it to hurt, and reacted as if it had. Anne looks at the mangled remains of Kid's prosthetic arm, and asks what he did to himself. It took a lot of salvaging to get the materials to even build that arm, but Kid tells her that Saul needs the fussing more than he does. She recoils as she finally gets a good look at Saul, but says that she'll go see what supplies she has. As she leaves, Saul asks Kid why, and remarks that he used his sword and fought back. Kid isn't sure what to say, just agreeing that he did do that, and Saul's face tenses up for a moment, but he instead looks to the ground and thanks Kid. Cruz quips that it's a touching moment, but it really wants to know where they are so it can get them back on track. Kid answers that they're in Camp Olympia in the Olympic National Forest, and Cruz exclaims that he ran all the way here from Seattle, a distance of dozens of miles. Kid just replies that he had to get away, as Anne returns, carrying a needle and thread. Saul asks why she's doing this, as it doesn't make any difference in the end, but she tells him that it's not a waste if it's being used for someone in need. She then says that Kid said the same things when they dragged him in, but she's sorry as they don't have the supplies to repair his arm, let alone make Saul a new one. She finishes stitching up his chest, and he thanks her, to which she says that they have to watch out for one another until the sun comes on back. The two step out of the tent into the camp, finding it to have a sense of life due to the small number of people going about their business. Kid explains that the Foundation has no idea these people are here, and they found him after Saul took his arm and eye. Saul remembers it, as it was after Kid raided one of the Keeper's libraries, and he hunted him down. He looks to Kid's missing arm and says that he should apologize for that. The two stand in silence for a moment before Saul says that he joined the Keepers because he's afraid. He's lived so much of his life anxious, terrified of what was going to happen tomorrow. When that war broke out, it felt like all of his fears were confirmed, and then it all just stopped, but he kept going. He felt blessed, in a way, that he got this one eternal moment and doesn't have to worry about tomorrow, because there just isn't one anymore. He doesn't have to worry about everyone he loves and everything he knows just vanishing, because they're all stuck right here. He feels like a man actually in control for once. Kid says that he's scared as well, and Saul jokes that he seems so self-assured, playfully punching his shoulder. Kid tells him that everyone's a bit afraid of what comes next, as you can't ever know the future, and Saul asks him what keeps him going. Kid closes his eyes for a moment and tells him to follow him. They head over to a tent, finding a young woman cradling an infant in her arms. Kid apologizes for bothering her, but she just shakes her head and smiles as the baby reaches out a pudgy hand. Kid meets it with his finger and smiles. After a moment, he gently takes the baby and passes him to Saul, who is hesitant, holding him as if he was holding a bomb. Kid explains that, as he said before, it's not about him. There are things he wants back, but there's another part of him that wants to do something that he'll be remembered for. Death is a foregone conclusion at this point for him, and he's made his peace with that, but he knows that this isn't about him and what he wants. This baby deserves a future too, and the chance to grow up and make the same mistakes they did. Saul is silent as the baby holds on to his finger, before eventually passing the infant back to the woman. As they head out, Saul asks if he still has that heart, and remarks that those stitches aren't going to hold up until morning. Cruz interjects to say that it has a route prepped for the shrine that won't go through Keeper's territory. Kid holds his hand out to Saul, telling him that whatever comes next, they'll be okay. It won't be a perfect world, but anything is better than this. Saul shakes his hand, and the two start traveling towards the shrine. Kid notes in his log that the world didn't end instantly. The Shrine of Eternum had stood neglected and forgotten for years. It wasn't one huge, bombastic event that brought it down to the ground, but traditions and customs had changed. New gods had come to replace the old, and those great old churches were replaced by newer, grander ones. The old gods slowly faded as the old stories and rituals that once sustained them stopped getting passed down and were relegated to little more than fairy tales. Saul had expected something grand when they crested the hill, signs that some great power had once resided here, but instead they were met with a pile of carved rubble and an overturned, vaguely humanoid statue in the center. Kid approached the center, drawing the sigil he knew so well, and when pressed, it glowed with the faintest light, and for a moment he could almost feel the chill of a February morning with it. He asks Cruz to confirm what they need to do here, and it states that the shrine itself was actually fairly sturdy, likely constructed from anomalous materials, which is why it lasted as long as it did. They'll need to reconstruct the shrine itself first, then insert the heart as a keystone. Kid asks if the Foundation is going to activate their big reset button when they're done, to which Cruz says, more than likely, yes. There's enough damage done and enough people who will remember this that it risks a total breach of normalcy. It's almost guaranteed that the Foundation is going to have a pretty aggressive amnestics campaign when it's all said and done. Saul remarks that even if they survive this, then they'll just forget it all, but Kid hopes that they'll remember this time together anyway. He and Saul exchange a glance and nod, getting to work rebuilding the shrine. It's hard with only two arms between them, but they have all the time in the world. Kid mentions to him that he didn't have to come all this way, to which Saul just says that Kid is definitely too scrawny for construction work. Saul assures him that it'll be fine, and Kid realizes how tense he is, trying to relax, but he can't. As they continue working on rebuilding the shrine, Kid feels a rising sense of dread building in his chest. When Saul tells him to take a moment, Kid states that he's going to die. He had known for a while now that death waited for him here, as his injuries were too extreme, and even with Saul here, he wouldn't be able to get medical aid in time. Saul agrees that he'll die as well, but tells Kid to look around for a moment, as there's worse places to kick the bucket. Kid does look around, seeing the view down the mountainside and into the city below, the morning sun peeking over the horizon in the distance. He then grabs the next stone, and they continue working, finally hauling the last stone atop the shrine. All that remains is the keystone, ready to be placed into the chest of the humanoid figure that sat at the center of the shrine. He places his fingers in the wound on Saul's chest, drawing the sigil in the hole of the shrine, before taking the heart and handing it to Saul. He tells him that this is his chance, as he could destroy it if he wanted to, and he'd have his eternal moment back. Saul takes the beating heart and smirks, stating that maybe he's ready for a change. He then inserts the heart into the shrine as Kid mutters the incantation. In a moment, he feels it, the heat from the flames around them, and the chill of a cool breeze, as every nerve ending in his body activates. He collapses to the ground in agony alongside Saul, who pulls him close. Kid takes sharp, shallow breaths, his first in so long, but soon relaxes. He says that everything hurts, but he feels so alive, and Saul laughs as a tear rolls down his cheek. Saul looks up at the rising sun and says that he can't believe he let himself miss this for so long. They're both quiet for a moment, a real moment, as the breeze blows, carrying the chirp of a songbird with it. The two state good morning to each other, and Kid cries. He cries years worth of tears as Saul holds him, acting as if he isn't just as hurt. He turns them to the horizon, and they watch as the sun begins to rise. The world breathes, and after 30 years, time finally ticks on to February 13th, 2022. 2025, 5:11 a.m. So, it's definitely an article that's a bit more of a story than a clinical document, and a rather beautiful one at that, but it does leave off the presumably tragic ending in which the two succumb to their injuries. These sorts of articles have been cropping up more and more over the years, being filled with hope and optimism, a far cry from the series' beginnings. Now that time has resumed, the Foundation will likely utilize SCP-2000, resetting the world and making everyone forget anything that happened in the previous 30 years. Things will go on as normal, and no one would even be aware of Kid and Saul's efforts if not for this log, which will be kept on secure Foundation servers as merely a reminder to keep the shrine intact. At least things will go on as normal, since in many cases in the SCP universe, they don't, and it's a nice reminder to chill out sometimes and take a moment, as you might not always have one.